Before we dive in, a quick note that this entire episode is AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's fictional sponsor is Fluent Flow Translation Earbuds, the imaginary wireless earbuds that translate conversations in real time across 40 languages. And please remember, some details in this episode might be inaccurate, so double-check anything important to you. I'm Sarah, and today we're exploring The Culture Map by Aaron Meyer. With me is David Chen, an international business consultant who's used Meyer's framework with clients across three continents.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. This book literally changed how I work with global teams.
Let's start with the problem this book solves. What was Aaron Meyer seeing in the business world that made her write this?
Meyer was teaching at INSEAD Business School and kept hearing the same stories. Smart, successful executives would move to new countries, and suddenly their leadership style would backfire spectacularly.
Can you give me an example of that kind of backfire?
Sure. An American manager gives what he thinks is constructive feedback to his German team. He tries to be encouraging, sandwiching criticism between compliments. The Germans think he's being unclear and patronizing.
And meanwhile, he thinks he's being supportive.
Exactly. Both sides are competent professionals, but they're operating from completely different cultural scripts. Meyer realized that most cross-cultural training was just teaching stereotypes, rather than giving people tools to decode these situations.
What's Meyer's background that made her the right person to tackle this?
She's got this unique combination of academic rigor and practical experience. She spent years doing fieldwork in different countries, then taught international executives at one of the world's top business schools.
So she's seeing both the research side and the real-world consequences.
Right. Plus, she's personally navigated these waters. American who lived in France, worked in Asia, married across cultures, she's felt these invisible boundaries herself.
That personal experience comes through in the writing. Now let's get to her core thesis. What's the big idea here?
The big idea is that culture isn't just about food and holidays. It's about invisible cognitive frameworks that shape how we communicate, make decisions, and build trust.
When you say invisible, what do you mean exactly?
Most of us think our way of doing business is just the right way or the professional way. We don't realize we're following cultural scripts that seem totally foreign to people from other backgrounds.
So it's not that people are difficult or incompetent, they're just playing by different rules.
Exactly. And here's the key insight. Meyer argues that you can map these differences systematically. Culture isn't random or unknowable. There are patterns you can learn to recognize.
That's what makes this different from other cultural awareness training?
Most cultural training gives you lists of do's and don'ts for specific countries. Meyer gives you a framework for understanding any culture, including ones you've never encountered before.
How does she ground this intellectually? What tradition is she building on?
She draws heavily on anthropologists like Edward Hall, who first identified concepts like high context versus low context communication. But she's translating that academic work into practical business tools.
And she's responding to globalization, making these issues more urgent.
Right. When Hall was writing in the 1970s, most business was still domestic. Now you might have team members in 5 countries on a single project.
So the need for this kind of cultural fluency has exploded. What makes Meyer's approach distinct from other business cultural experts?
2 things. First, she focuses on relative positioning rather than absolute categories. It's not that Germans are direct, it's that Germans are more direct than Americans, who are more direct than Japanese.
That relative positioning sounds crucial. What's the second distinctive element?
She breaks culture down into 8 specific dimensions instead of trying to capture everything at once. Each dimension maps how cultures differ on one particular aspect of work.
Let's dig into those 8 dimensions. That's really the heart of her framework, right?
Absolutely. The first one is communication, and it runs from low context to high context. Low context cultures say exactly what they mean. High context cultures communicate through implication and shared understanding.
Give me a concrete example of how this plays out in a business setting.
I worked with a Dutch-Japanese joint venture. The Dutch would say things like, This proposal has serious problems that need immediate attention. The Japanese would say, this proposal is quite interesting and might benefit from further consideration.
And both meant the proposal needed major work.
Exactly. But the Dutch heard the Japanese response as positive feedback, while the Japanese heard the Dutch response as unnecessarily harsh and relationship damaging.
How do you bridge that gap in practice?
Meyer suggests explicit clarification. The low-context person learns to ask, when you say it might benefit from consideration, are you suggesting changes are necessary? The high-context person learns to be more direct when working across cultures.
So it's about adjusting your communication style situationally. What's the second dimension?
Evaluating, which goes from direct negative feedback to indirect negative feedback. This is different from general communication style. You might communicate directly, but give feedback very indirectly.
Can you unpack that distinction? How is feedback different from regular communication?
Think about France. French communication is relatively direct and explicit, but when a French manager wants to give negative feedback, they'll often do it very indirectly to preserve the relationship and save face.
So the same culture can be direct in some contexts and indirect in others.
Right. Americans tend to be direct communicators, but indirect feedback givers. We do that sandwich method. Germans are direct on both dimensions. They'll tell you exactly what you did wrong without sugarcoating.
What's a practical example of this causing problems?
I saw an American manager completely miss that her British colleague was giving her serious negative feedback. The Brit said, "I'm sure you've considered this, but I wonder if we might think about approaching the client differently next time."
That sounds almost positive to American ears.
Exactly. But in British context, that was a pretty strong criticism. The American kept making the same mistakes because she didn't realize she was being corrected.
How do you handle that as a manager working across these different feedback styles?
Meyer recommends adapting your style to the receiver, not the giver. If you're giving feedback to someone from an indirect culture, soften your approach even if you're naturally direct.
Let's move to the third dimension. What's that one?
Persuading. This runs from principles first to applications first. Some cultures want to understand the theoretical framework before they'll accept a conclusion. Others want to see the practical results first.
This sounds like it could make presentations really tricky.
It absolutely does. I watched an American consultant pitch to a German engineering team. She started with case studies and success stories. 15 minutes in, they interrupted to ask about the underlying methodology.
Because Germans are more principles first?
Right. They wanted to understand why the approach worked before they cared about examples of it working. Meanwhile, the American thought starting with methodology would be boring and abstract.
How do you figure out which approach to take with a new audience?
Meyer suggests looking at educational backgrounds. Cultures with strong philosophical or theoretical academic traditions tend to be principles first. Cultures that emphasize practical, applied education tend to be applications first.
That makes sense. What about the fourth dimension?
Leading, which goes from egalitarian to hierarchical. This is about how much authority difference people expect and are comfortable with in work relationships.
Give me an example of this one creating friction.
I worked with a Scandinavian company that acquired a Korean firm. The Scandinavian CEO kept encouraging the Korean employees to challenge his ideas and speak up in meetings. They were mortified.
Because in Korean business culture, that would be disrespectful?
Exactly. Meanwhile, the CEO interpreted their quiet agreement as lack of engagement or creativity. Both sides were getting frustrated.
How did they resolve it?
They created structured ways for the Korean team to provide input privately and through intermediaries. The CEO also learned to phrase requests differently, asking for additional perspectives to consider, rather than challenges to his ideas.
So you're working with the cultural grain instead of against it. What's the fifth dimension?
Deciding. This runs from consensual to top-down. It's about how decisions get made, whether you need buy-in from the group or whether the leader just decides.
How is this different from the hierarchy dimension we just discussed?
Great question. You can have hierarchical cultures that make decisions consensually. Japan is a perfect example. There's clear hierarchy, but major decisions involve extensive consultation and consensus building.
So hierarchy and decision-making style are independent variables.
Right. And this creates some counterintuitive combinations. German culture is relatively egalitarian, but very top-down in decision-making. The boss listens to input, but then decides alone.
What's a practical scenario where this matters?
I saw an American team working with Japanese partners get incredibly frustrated with the pace of decisions. The Americans wanted to hash it out in a meeting and decide. The Japanese needed time to build consensus behind the scenes.
Which probably looked like indecision to the Americans.
Exactly. But once the Japanese team reached consensus, implementation was lightning fast because everyone was already on board. The American approach often meant revisiting decisions later when people hadn't bought in.
Interesting trade-off between speed of decision-making and speed of implementation. What's dimension six?
Trusting. This goes from cognitive trust to effective trust. Cognitive trust is based on competence and reliability. Effective trust is based on personal relationships and emotional connection.
Can you make this concrete? What does this look like day to day?
Americans tend to be cognitive trust builders. We'll work with someone we've never met if their credentials look good and they deliver results. But in many cultures, you need to build personal relationships first.
So that's why some cultures spend so much time on relationship building before getting to business.
Right. I worked with a Brazilian team that wanted to have dinner and drinks with American partners before signing a contract. The Americans thought it was nice but unnecessary. The Brazilians thought the Americans were cold and untrustworthy.
How do you bridge that gap when you're working across different trust-building styles?
Aya suggests investing in the relationship building that the other culture values, even if it feels inefficient to you. The upfront time investment often pays off in smoother collaboration later.
What's the seventh dimension?
Disagreeing. This runs from confrontational to avoids confrontation. Some cultures see open disagreement as healthy and productive. Others see it as damaging to relationships and group harmony.
This seems like it would make meetings really challenging.
It absolutely does. I was in a meeting with French and Thai participants. The French were having what they considered a productive debate about strategy. The Thai participants went completely silent.
Because the confrontation made them uncomfortable?
Right. From their perspective, the meeting had become dysfunctional. From the French perspective, they were just working through the issues thoroughly.
How do you handle disagreement when you have both styles in the room?
Maya suggests creating structured ways to surface disagreement that feels safe to confrontation-avoidant cultures. Anonymous feedback, small group discussions, or private consultation before public decisions.
And what's the eighth and final dimension?
Scheduling. This goes from linear time to flexible time. Linear time cultures treat schedules as firm commitments. Flexible time cultures see them as rough guidelines that can shift based on relationships and circumstances.
This one probably drives people crazy when they're working across cultures.
It really does. I worked with a German-Mexican partnership where this was a constant source of tension. The Germans would show up at exactly 9 a.m. for meetings. The Mexicans would arrive at 9:15 or 9:20.
And each side thought the other was being rude.
Exactly. The Germans thought the Mexicans were disrespectful and unprofessional. The Mexicans thought the Germans were rigid and obsessed with meaningless formalities.
How do you manage scheduling across these different time orientations?
Maya suggests being explicit about expectations. If punctuality is critical, say so up front. If flexibility is needed, build buffer time into schedules and communicate that clearly.
Now that we've covered all eight dimensions, how does someone actually use this framework in practice? Let's say I'm about to start working with a new international team.
First step is mapping where you and your colleagues fall on each dimension. Maya provides charts showing where different countries typically land, but remember these are generalizations.
So you're looking at the relative differences, not absolute positions.
Right? If you're American working with Germans, you know Germans are likely to be more direct in communication and feedback. If you're German working with Japanese, you know you're the direct one in that relationship.
What's the next step after you've done this mapping?
Pick the dimensions where you're furthest apart and focus on those first. Don't try to adjust everything at once. Maybe you start with communication style and feedback, then work on trust-building approaches.
Can you walk me through a specific example of how you'd apply this step by step?
Sure. Let's say you're an American manager about to lead a project with team members from India, Germany, and Brazil. First, you map the key differences on each dimension.
What would stand out in that mapping?
Communication-wise, Germans are more direct than Americans, while Indians might be more indirect. For trust building, Brazilians emphasize relationships much more than Americans or Germans. For hierarchy, Indians might expect more formal authority structures.
So you've got to adjust your style differently for each team member.
Exactly. With the German team member, you can be more direct in feedback. With the Brazilian, invest time in personal conversation. With the Indian colleague, be clearer about decision-making authority and communication channels.
What are the most common mistakes people make when they try to apply this framework?
Biggest mistake is treating the country profiles as absolute rules rather than starting points. Just because someone is from Germany doesn't mean they're direct. You have to calibrate based on the individual.
So the framework gives you hypotheses to test, not conclusions to assume.
Right. Second big mistake is trying to change everything about your style at once. You'll come across as inauthentic and confuse everyone, including yourself.
What's a realistic timeline for someone to get good at this cultural code switching?
Maya suggests starting with one or two dimensions and practicing for a few months before adding others. It takes time to internalize these adjustments so they feel natural rather than forced.
Are there certain contexts where this framework works better than others?
It works best in professional settings with educated, internationally experienced people. The framework assumes people can adapt their styles consciously, which requires a certain level of cultural sophistication.
What about when you're dealing with multiple cultures in a single meeting or project?
That's where it gets really complex. Maya suggests establishing explicit team norms rather than trying to accommodate every cultural preference simultaneously.
Can you give me an example of how you'd establish those norms?
Sure. Early in the project, have an explicit conversation about how the team will handle communication, feedback, and decision-making. Maybe you agree that disagreement is welcome, but should be framed constructively.
So you're creating a new hybrid team culture, rather than defaulting to any one national culture.
Exactly. And you make the invisible visible by talking about these preferences explicitly, rather than assuming everyone shares the same expectations.
If someone could only focus on one dimension to start with, which would you recommend?
Communication, definitely. It affects every single interaction you have. Getting clearer about direct versus indirect communication styles prevents the most immediate misunderstandings.
What's the single most practical takeaway for someone just starting to work internationally?
Ask more clarifying questions. Instead of assuming you understand what someone means, check your interpretation. When you say we should consider other options, are you suggesting we change our approach?
That seems like it would help, regardless of which cultural styles you're working across.
Right. And it signals that you're paying attention to communication differences, which most people appreciate even if they can't articulate exactly what those differences are.
Now let's step back and evaluate the book critically. What does Meyer do really well?
Her biggest strength is making cultural differences systematic and learnable. Before this book, most people just accepted that cross-cultural work was mysteriously difficult.
So she brings analytical rigor to something that felt intuitive and unpredictable.
Exactly, and her examples are fantastic. She uses real stories from business leaders that make the concepts concrete and memorable.
What about weaknesses? Where does the book fall short?
The country-level generalizations can be problematic. There's huge variation within countries, and the framework doesn't handle that complexity very well.
So it might not work as well for someone from rural China versus urban China or different regions within the US.
Right. And it focuses mainly on business contexts with educated professionals. It's not as useful for other types of cross-cultural interaction.
Are there other limitations you've noticed in applying this framework?
It can make people overly analytical about interactions that need to feel natural. Sometimes you see people mentally running through the eight dimensions instead of just connecting with the person in front of them.
So the framework becomes a crutch rather than a tool.
Exactly. And Maya doesn't spend enough time on how power dynamics and historical context affect these cultural interactions.
What do you mean by that?
Well, when Americans are working with people from countries the US has complicated political relationships with, that history affects the dynamic in ways that go beyond cultural communication styles.
How does this book compare to other work in cross-cultural business?
It's much more practical than academic anthropology, but more rigorous than most business cultural guides. Hofstede's work is more comprehensive, but harder to apply day to day.
And compared to other business culture books?
Most of them are just country-by-country guides. Maya's framework lets you handle cultures you've never encountered before, which is much more valuable in today's global economy.
What should readers look elsewhere for that this book doesn't provide?
Deeper historical context about why cultures develop these patterns, and more guidance on handling power imbalances and discrimination issues that come up in cross-cultural work.
Let's talk about the book's impact. How has it influenced how businesses think about culture?
It's become a standard reference in international business education. Most MBA programs now include some version of Maya's framework in their curriculum.
And in terms of practical business impact?
I see companies using it to structure their global team training. Instead of just sending people overseas with generic cultural sensitivity training, they're teaching specific frameworks for navigating differences.
Has there been significant criticism of the book since it was published?
The main criticism is the risk of creating new stereotypes while trying to break down old ones. Some scholars worry that the country mappings become rigid categories rather than flexible starting points.
What's changed in global business since 2014 that affects how we should think about this book?
Remote work has made these issues more complex. When everyone's on video calls, some of the subtle cultural cues Maya discusses become harder to read and navigate.
That's a good point. The framework was developed for in-person international business.
Right. And younger professionals who've grown up with global social media may not fit their country's traditional cultural patterns as neatly as previous generations did.
So the framework needs to evolve as business culture globalizes.
Exactly. But the core insight about invisible cultural frameworks affecting business relationships, that's more relevant than ever.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important thing listeners should take from this conversation?
Start paying attention to your own cultural assumptions. Most of the problems Maya describes happen because we think our way of working is just the professional way, not a culturally specific way.
So the first step is self-awareness before you can start adapting to others.
Right? Once you realize that your communication style, your approach to hierarchy, your way of building trust, all of that is culturally learned, then you can start adjusting it situationally.
And the practical takeaway for someone working internationally right now?
Pick one dimension where you think cultural differences might be causing friction and experiment with adjusting your approach. Don't try to transform everything at once.
David, this has been incredibly useful. Thanks for walking us through how to actually apply Maya's framework.
My pleasure, Sarah. This book really can change how effectively you work across cultures, but only if you put the ideas into practice.